Accession number 32971, reel 3.
Bill Machin, take 2, side 1. So 1939, in the summer, you realised that something was up.
Yeah, in June 1939, they knew that something was going up, and they started making munitions and all that. And in June 39, they called up the A reservist, which was me, the first category of reserve, A reservist. They called us up for 2 months, that's from June 15th to August 15th. And we had to report to Aldershot, and that's when I went to 35 Company at Aldershot for 2 months. And what we were doing, they then called up the first batch of National Servicemen. The first batch of National Servicemen was June 39. What we were doing was A reserves. They called us up to help to train those National Servicemen for 2 months.
Did that mean that you were now a lance corporal or a corporal? Or?
No, I was still a driver. And and then on August, that was June 15th to August 15th, 39. And then August 15th, we're going home, and this, at the last minute they said, you've got to take all your kit home with you, your uniform and everything. And if there isn't an emergency before then, you'll have to send it back to the pass it up and send it all back, actually. But that's all right. Thinking I'll have to take a kit home with the uniform. So anyway, I think they said that if emergency, if war wasn't declared or something like that, we had to send it back. I'm not quite sure when, but I know I'd still got it when war started. Anyway, that's August 1539. On September the 1st, announced on the radio and everything, all A reservists report immediately to your units. I've got my uniform then. I've got my kit then, so off I went back to Aldershot. 35th Company. And that was on the Friday, and of course on the Sunday the war started.
And what were your feelings about that?
Well, my feelings weren't very good at the time, because I knew how my wife was, you know.
Just taking you back a bit there, so you'd met somebody prior. You'd met somebody you wanted to marry a bit prior?
No, my wife.
Yes.
My wife.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I've known her a long time.
Yes.
Know.
Yes. And you.
Anyway,
And
it's on the tape.
Yes, it's all part of your life. So you'd met somebody and wanted to get married at that point?
My wife?
Yes. But, but you hadn't married her at that point.
Oh,
no.
But she was having my eldest son, the baby. Yeah. And knew that. Get married in October or something like that. And of course, we didn't know the war started. So, and off I went to Aldershot. A bit of a panic. Because our commanding officer in those days, he was from the First World War, and he was one of these blood and guts men, you know. He got us on parade that Sunday morning when war was declared, and he says, you know, we're going to France in a few days' time, and a lot of you won't come back. See? I thought, there's one here who's got to do something if I'm not coming back. I went to the sergeant major and I told him the situation. I said, can I just have 48 hours to get home? He said, we're not supposed to. Well, I said, I've got to do. Anyway, I got 48 hours leave. And in that 48 hours, wife and I, we went and arranged a marriage at church, at Christ Church in Doncaster, and arranged whatever we could do, you know. All in 48 hours, and back again. Anyway, we got married. And my wedding night, we got married on the Saturday morning. Actually, I got 48 hours from Thursday to Saturday, midnight Saturday. And we got married on the Friday. Now then, Saturday morning, a few hours after the ceremony, I had to get on the train back to Aldershot. I got to, back to Aldershot early hours on Sunday morning, and I spent my wedding night in a tent.
Yeah.
And then the next time I saw my wife was after Dunkirk.
Goodness.
Yeah. And I've got postcards in there, you know. And then I sent one from Nantes, down the River Loire, that's where I landed at Nantes. And I remember sending this postcard, and I've got a wall in there.
So for you, the outbreak of war was quite a traumatic experience.
Yeah, it was,
in many ways,
yeah,
yes.
It was, yes.
Yes. So you mobilised?
Oh, well, yeah, it was mobilised, of course. And off I went to France. Down to Newport in Wales and got on the ships there and off I went. Across the channel, down the River Loire and landed at Nantes. And that night, I always remember, we slept in a garage at Nantes on the bare concrete floor. And we're all sleeping on nothing really, only on the floor, you know. And the CO, he's sleeping in this garage as well, the commanding officer. And he's on a camp bed, you know, officer's camp bed. And I can see him now, we're all flat on the floor, we can see this chap in the middle on his camp bed.
And you went to France on the 16th of September,
39. I think the Canadians got some come the 16th. I think it was the 17th when we passed that, so it'd be 17th, yeah.
So as you went to France, you passed the Courageous.
Well, what passed wreckage, floating wreckage, was part of the Courageous that had got torpedoed the day before.
So that was quite...
jumping, yeah.
Quite a scary sight for
it
you.
It was that, yes.
It was for real, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, it was. Yeah. And I always remember when we got nearer to Saint-Nazaire, some lads were looking over the side of the ship and we all dashed over to see what they were looking at. And there was a periscope just coming up through the water. And we're all glued to it. We thought, God, Ram, it's a German submarine. And it came up and up, and it was on one of our submarines. Yeah.
Great relief all round.
Yeah, helping to escort, I suppose, yes. Yeah, I remember that. And then went down past Saint-Nazaire, down Nantes, to Nantes. And then next morning, we travelled right from Nantes across France, through Le Mans and that way, down to northern France, Amiens. Down to what was the old Somme area in 1480, near Arras and Cambrai and Douai.
And what were you driving?
I was on a motorbike then, escorting. And I was a corporal then, I made me corporal, so I was escorting. And we got down to the northern France area. And we were billeted on in French farmhouses, well, not in the houses, but in the barns. We were sleeping in the barns and all that, you know. And we was at a place called Say, Saiyy, between Cambrai and Douai. And we was in this village until the balloon went up in the May 14, you know, till the Germans. And of course, I got to know these people, these farmers and that, and families very well. In fact,
were you billeted in their houses?
No, in the barns, sleeping in the barns, on the straw, you know.
So, you didn't see any action of any sort, or were a lot of rumours going around?
Oh, yeah, bags of rumours. But then, I'm saying, I was in this farmyard, in this barn, with this family, and we still keep in touch with them today. Well, the old people have gone. And when we were children like this now, their grandmothers, they've got children.
Lovely.
And we still kept in touch, and my boys have still kept in touch.
That's lovely.
In fact, I was over there last October. And anyway, we're there till the beginning of May 1940. Then the balloon went up. The Germans came over and bombed around Lille and Douai and that way. Of course, we immediately got ready and we got our orders and predetermined places where we got to go. And we all assembled outside Douai and with other units, part of the brigade, whatever it was. and our destination was a predetermined line called the Dyle Line on the River Dyle, east of Brussels. You see, Belgium remained neutral until then, and we couldn't go into Belgium, but we got all our stuff lined up around the Belgian borders, around Lille and that, you know, because we knew that's what would happen. Of course, as soon as the Germans came over and bombed Belgium and everything, we'll drop paratroop, they lifted up the barriers and welcomed us through. And we went through to make our way to this, what you call the Dyle Line, or the Dyle, going east from the coast east to Brussels. And went through Brussels, and the cheering to us and girls throwing flowers and about 6 days later we're on the retreat. We're coming back through Brussels. The fates are down there, you know. Got it? I felt sorry for myself.
And the retreat was caused by you were attacked or
the
Blitzkrieg was moving so quickly.
Yeah, the Germans moved that quickly from Holland and into Belgium and on the southeast. Metz. Anyway, I forget the name, but they came in and did a pincer movement, you see. They came in from Holland and that way, this way, and then they came in from the southeast and round the old battlefields of the First World War towards the coast and a pincer movement. And we got this corridor to escape in down to Dunkirk. And that was the start of it, you know.
So your orders were to retreat, so...
Oh, yes, yeah, couldn't do anything else but to retreat. I mean, we were surrounded, more or less. And, now I'm over in the story. By then I was a corporal, and I had this section of lorries, 6, and about 12 men. My lorry was all loaded with 25-pounder shells. I've got all the shell cases there now. 25-pounder shells, and I was feeding this artillery battery. Well, I had map references, right? Batteries also, they're multi-sort. And I get this map reference, get the lorry, and off we go to take them the ammunition. Get there, they moved. So I'd get another map reference, off we go. Get there, they moved again. Of course, they're all on the retreat, Dunkirk, you see. And that's how I eventually get to Dunkirk. And I got to Dunkirk, to the outskirts of Dunkirk, where the canal was. On the way, we're getting dive bombed by the Stukas, you know, and the German artillery that got a fix on you, and they will show you. I'm going past this field with my 6 lorries, and a Stuka dive bomber come over to bomb us, but the bomb dropped in the field there. Sanders. And the explosion lifted me off the motorbike onto the floor. The motorbike dropped on my leg, on this leg. They put the left leg in the paper, it's on the right leg. Because made a nasty job of it. Anyway, I took my boot off and had a look, and we used to have what you call a field dressing then. In a pouch, everybody had a field dressing, like a wad of bandage and impregnated with iodine. I put the field dressing around it. Tried to put my boot back on, I couldn't, my foot had come up like that. But one of our drivers, he had some Wellington boots, and he got big feet, they must have been about size 10 or something, you know. He said, try one of these, Corporal. So I got his Wellington boot and I put that on. Got back on my bike, it wasn't damaged much, and off I went again. Got to Dunkirk, halted outside Dunkirk at the side of the canal, and that's it, now I've been back to the hotel. And what do they do now? Because that Dunkirk was getting bombed and it was parts in flames. It was utter chaos. And this was on a Sunday night. And so I got me back. I said to the lad, look, stop here. I'm going into Dunkirk to see what's happening. So I went in and some military police about. I said, well, is there any HQs around here? He said, well, over there under that building, got down in that cellar. So I went down into this cellar. I'm seeing now some officers sat around the table in candlelight, you know, because electric, you know. I said, look, I've got 6 lorry loads of 25-pounder shells. I'm parked outside again the canal. What do I do? What's happening? Oh, destroy your boat, destroy your lorries and get down on the beach. That's all he got to know, you know. So I went back to where my lorries were and I put my motorbike and that into the canal. I might still be there. And the lorries, all I could do was, I said, right, drain your water off, drain your oil out of your sump, start them up and rev up. And they did that and absolutely revved up until the engines were red hot. That made them immobile. Then we got down on the beach. And of course there were some of the first people there. That was on the Sunday night, about May the 23rd. And we didn't know what was happening. I thought, well, we surround us, I suppose, and the Navy is probably coming in to pick us up and land us further down the beach, further down the coast, you know. Again, because that wasn't the case. So, wandering about the beach all night and in the sand dunes, and next morning there were thousands there on the beach, they were streaming in, you know, different units. And you've seen on the TV where they, all these Dunkirk, all these queues, haven't you? Well, of course, there's all different regiments and battalions and companies forming these queues, and officers there as well. And I'm on my own with these 12 men. I got to one of these queues and get in it. What are you doing here? You're not in our regiment, you know. Get away. And that's how it went on. And in the end, I said, I'm in the British Army, aren't I? So anyway, I thought, well, this is no good. So I said to the lads, come on. I said, we're getting off the beach. I said, we'll make our way down to Calais. That was about 20 miles or so down the coast. I didn't know it had already been captured. So we got off the beach and set off. Got nearest to Dunkirk town itself, all the oil, big oil containers, you know, they're all at flame. You know. And there's a mole, like a pier, that rang out. And I saw this steamer tied, this old ship we used to call them tramp steamers, at this pier. I said, right, lads. I said, come on with me. We dashed along this pier best way we could and jumped on it. And so we jumped on it, he was away. And just as it pulled away, a Stuka came over and dropped a bomb on it and cut it in half. And I've been back since with my eldest son. Well, 1990, the 50th anniversary, went back, and it was still there, this mold, and it still hadn't been repaired. But, of course, prior to that, the Stukas had been coming over and bombing the beaches, and there was thousands and thousands of troops on there, and men were getting killed, and we were burying them in the sand dunes, you know. And there was an hospital ship, and we were loading the wounded into these little boats that were taking them out to the hospital ship. The boats that wouldn't have us, and then the hospital ship pulled away, and just as it pulled away, the Stuka bombers came over, dive-bombed it, direct it. Next morning, there's people on the beach that we'd helped to load on, you know, terrible, terrible it was. Some of my worst memories of that, you sort of loaded them in vain, you know. And, they come over on the beach and dive bomb and chaps getting killed and you couldn't lay in there, you had to bury them, you see. I mean, alive 1 minute, next minute, you're digging graves.
Did you lose any of your company?
I didn't lose any of my 12 men. Some part of the company, some lost. But I worked with them. I was detached away from them, you see. That's why nobody would have me. But, of course, I got back home eventually. And
So the paddle steamer pulled away from the mole.
Yeah.
And how many people were on it?
Oh, there's quite a lot of people on it that they picked up. And anyway, we set off. And all I can remember, we got so far and across. It was a beautiful day. You got the French coast on your left there, you can see it, you know, and over here the cliffs of Dover. Wasn't been going long. A plane came over, and I stood there holding the handrails. I thought, blimey, this is it now. No life jackets or anything. I thought, this is it, we're going to be at the bottom. And it swooped over, up again, and then waggled its wings. It was a Spitfire, you know. And it
sort of, you're really pleased to see that.
We thought it was a Messerschmitt or something. Anyway, we got to Dover, couldn't get in. It was that packed full of ships. Had to go up to Folkestone. And they went up to Folkestone and got off there, and then...
What sort of welcome back did you get?
Pardon?
What sort of welcome did you get? Were you...
Well, I mean, it was packed. There was troops streaming off all these boats, and I can't find any welcome. But there was some women there, like these voluntary organisations.
WVS.
Yeah, so like with tea and that, and they had many cups of tea. And then there were, the military police was ushering you onto trains. Come on, get moving, get on the trains. Because there's that many people there, and everything was getting jammed up. And the trains in the station, and you didn't know where you was going. You just got on the train, and that was it. And you didn't care, you was that tired out.
How long since you'd slept properly? How long had it been since you'd slept properly?
Oh, well, I'd been on the beach 5 days. I hadn't really had any sleep. I mean, at night time, you tried to lay down in the sand dunes and you know, get off, but you couldn't, you see. I mean, you had nothing to eat. We got water, a water bottle full of water, which you always carried, you know.
Did you think at any time you weren't going to make it?
Oh, often, yes. I did, yes, I did. And I'll say this to you now, I'm not a dead religious man, not like me, some, but anyway, I got on my hands and knees in those sand dunes, and I said a prayer for my wife and my baby who hadn't seen, because I didn't think I was going to come home. And you know, after that, I mean, anybody who says they weren't frightened, they're liars, you know, because you everybody's scared. But you know, after that, a sort of calm came over me. It did, really, yeah. And I always think of that.
You've made your peace.
But, hello.
So when you got on the trains to the other end, where did you come off?
We landed up, well, we all fell asleep, you know, we're dead beat. And we landed up at, we landed up at Yeovil, this train. We'd gone all over the country, anywhere where they could take them. You know. Landed up at Yeovil. And we're at Yeovil for a few days, and they began sorting things out, and they put on notice board various units and where they were, and my unit was being reformed at Mansfield in Nottinghamshire. And we got on the train from Yeovil up to Mansfield, and got to Mansfield, and we're in these schools. I often see them because my eldest son lives there. And we're in these schools, King Andrew's schools at Mansfield. And we got, a few days, we got new equipment came through and new lorries and everything. Because we got nothing, you see. And made up for strength for, you know, some people who hadn't made it. And so we had to get some, you know, we got new recruits come to us to make us up the strength again, and all these new lorries, new equipment. Oh, and the rifles we got was Canadian Ross rifles, right old fashioned things from the First World War, but they come over from America and Canada, you know, to lease and lend.
Lease
and lend. And we got all those, and we.
How did you feel yourself? Did you wonder what on earth was going to happen next, whether England was going to be invaded? Or?
Oh, yes, I did that. And of course, in Mansfield, when we got organised and got the arrivals and that, at night time, we had to go out at night on duty in Sherwood Forest, all around there. I know it well because my eldest son lives there, you know, and I come from there. All around Sherwood Forest, on what you call para-watch. There was rumours that the Germans was going to land paratroops all around, see? And we just have to go out at night around Sherwood Forest with the rifle. Watching out for these paratroopers, which never came, of course. But
it's a very real thought, isn't it, after what had happened?
Oh, yeah, terrible.
Yeah.
And of course, they started forming the Home Guard as well then, and they have so many Home Guard people with us, you know. And remember one night. I was on Sherwood Forest Way somewhere in the middle of the night. I got early hours in the morning, dusk had broken. I'm getting a bit browned off, and a lot of rabbits round there, and I saw this big rabbit running across the field there. So I couldn't tell myself. I got my rifle, bang! Shoot the rabbit. Next minute, all these Home Guard people running, what's happening? Well, the thought something had started. I said, for God's sake, don't tell anybody else. I said, I shall get 6 months.
So some sort of semblance of order was slowly getting back after everybody was reorganising themselves and wondering what was going to happen next.
Yeah, we did.
Well, Bill, you were back in Mansfield and you'd had 2 months at home after your return from Dunkirk. Did a lot of things go through your mind about what had happened at Dunkirk?
Well, I think I mentioned to you about the people getting killed by the Stuka dive bombers and we're having to bury them in the sand dunes. 1 minute you could be talking to a man and the next minute he was there, you know, gone.
Did they have casualty clearing centres there on the beach?
Oh no, nothing like that. No.
What happened to the wounded people?
Well, the wounded people did what they could for them. And then they took priority into the little boats that were coming up to Kewes, and they put them in the little boats, and I think I've mentioned, and took them out to an hospital ship that was standing offshore. And I think I mentioned about the hospital ship, them getting bombed.
Yes, you did.
And the wounded being washed back next day on the beach with the tide.
And you telling me about the little ships, little boats that came in?
No, the little boats, and there's by the, we'll say, the second day on the beach was actually packed thousands and thousands of men, different regiments and different companies, and all formed orderly queues on the beach, stretching miles and miles, and controlled by their own officers and all this sort of thing. And the little boats, their job was coming in from the ships that was anchored offshore in deep water, that they came in under their own power or rowed in, and they load, and then they the chaps in the queue, they sort of got on them, maybe about, probably take 10, 20, 30 or up to 50, depends how big it was, and off they went out to the ship that was anchored in deep water, and they got on the ship, scrambled on board. When that ship was full, it pulled up anchor and off it went back to Dover or somewhere.
Did you see many of the little ships being attacked by the Stukas?
Oh, yeah. Well, they were sort of coming over and dive bombing, and they couldn't miss. There was that many ships in the you might have said, the bay. And they're after the bigger ones, of course, but a lot of the little ships were getting hit or blown out of the water with the explosion, and men drowned, you know. Terrible lot of men drowned. And
were you allowed to take equipment with you, or is it just dump everything and
No, there wasn't much equipment taken, because you couldn't, you see, on the chaps were wading out, some chaps were trying to swim out to the boats, to the big ships, and they were trying to wade out, and then till they got water up to the neck, as you might say, and then they'd try and swim. Well, they couldn't do it with the equipment on them, all that sort of thing. A terrible lot of people drowned, there was.
And there was no water supply?
Well, there's one or two tankers, army water tankers, got down on the edge of the beach, and people were near them. They were lucky they could go and fill the water bottles. Because when they got when the tanker was empty, that was it. They couldn't go and replenish it anyway. And
there was no supplies of water in Dunkirk then?
In the town itself, well, I don't know about that. It was terribly bombed and it was all burning and clouds of smoke and the big oil storage tanks around the dock area. Mm. They were on fire, which was one way helped because the place was, these oil storage tanks got on fire and the black smoke poured up into the sky and it created a cloud over Dunkirk, which helped us with the Stukas, with the vision of the bombing, you see. They couldn't see what they were doing when all these black clouds came up, and they just dropped them at random then.
So did the collection of the men happen 24 hours a day, or was it just during the daytime and you slept in the